And welcome to another edition of the Southern Fried Podcast, a production of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. I'm Rex Nelson, senior editor of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. An old friend, Nate Coulter, has dropped by today to visit. Nate, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Rex. Operative word there is old, I guess. You had to tell everybody in your column a few weeks ago how old we are.
Sorry about that. I mean, I think we're...
But you're one month older than I am.
I was going to say, we're within a month of each other.
You got a birthday a week from today.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So we're within a month of each other. We're both Southwest Arkansas boys. So got a few things in common. You're a lot smarter than I am, so not everything in common.
You grew up in a big city. Arkadelphia was a huge metropolis compared to Nashville, Arkansas, when I was a kid.
Nashville, Arkansas. So we may talk about Nashville later, but we're going to talk mainly about your job as executive director of the Central Arkansas Library System. I guess where I wanted to start is kind of talk about libraries and the role they played in your life. I know, we will go back to Southwest Arkansas. They played a role in my life. Arkadelphia's got this classic old library building. I know you've seen it with the white columns. In fact, when the Women's Library Association built it, one of the speakers they brought in to raise money to build the facility was William Jennings Bryan, came in and gave a speech, which I've always loved.
Cross of Gold.
Yeah, exactly. Now, that's not where he gave the Cross of Gold speech, but I'm sure he gave a later version of it there. But it was right next to my dad's store, which was in the old post office building there. So I would go over there and just spend all day in the summer. And they had this room called the Arkansas Room, and I was always this Arkansas history nerd, which I still am. And I remember they had the Gazette and the Democrat special editions they had put out in 1936 in honor of Arkansas Centennial that year. And I would just spend hours reading all the stories in those. I was going to see if you had similar experiences with
the library. Yes, I did. The library in Nashville was in the original courthouse that had been the site of the county government when they moved it from Center Point to Nashville. It was a two- or three-story building, stucco, with wood floors. I'll remember, always sadly, they've torn that building down, but it had the jail in it still at that time in the back. But my mother would take me in there. Everybody has a story like this, and sadly, as fathers, it was usually the mothers who were, in our generation, right, who were taking their kids to the libraries. I think that's changed a little bit. But my mother would take me regularly, and she would steer me to some books, but I generally was inclined towards sports books. There was a series of history books for children, juveniles. We were there at the Battle of the Bulge, or we were there at Gettysburg, and that sort of thing. And I was fascinated by those. A lot of sports books, of course, I was interested in. I was reading the Democrat sports section in the afternoon. We'd get in Nashville, and it would have the overnight scores. The Gazette, as you know, was being delivered by bus about 10:30 the night before.
They had those early deadlines for us, so we couldn't get night sports scores in the Gazette.
But one thing I tell people, you know, and this is, I'm in an endangered species. I'm a Democrat in Arkansas now, but part of the reason was my mother steered me toward a lot of books when I was a kid about politics. And at that time, this would have been the late 60s, early 70s. There were a lot of books written about the Kennedys and Camelot, even for young audiences. And so I was swayed by that, sort of like Mike Beebe.
Right.
He was a little older than I am, but he was influenced by the Kennedy era. And I guess I was, too, as a child.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So you had a long legal career, and then you make the decision to go to the Central Arkansas Library System. What went into that? Why this late career change for you?
Well, part of the thing was, I remember Bill Clinton used to talk about that in the modern era, the average person would have seven jobs. Mm-hmm. I was way behind on that. I'd been a lawyer and sort of a failed politician a time or two. Enabled you to get a nice run in government. I contributed indirectly to your career in the state government. But I had decided at some point, you know, everybody has one of these little stories. I was driving back from a trial in Hot Springs where my friend Jimmy Simpson at the Friday Firm had bested me in a case that I thought there was no way to lose. I said, maybe I need to do something else. I'm about to turn 50. I started scratching around. I had been involved in the library. Bobby Roberts was a good friend. I'd been on the board for 6 years. And as I say, as a child, I always was interested in libraries. I tell people now, I was probably a nerd. I played sports, but I was really at heart a nerd. You know, books also had a lot to do with my being a lawyer. I remember reading To Kill a Mockingbird, and like a lot of kids who go to law school, I thought I was going to be an Atticus Finch in a small town. Turned out that's not what practicing law is always about. Your son in Austin will find out some of that. But he's going to teach. Yes. I tell people who come to me now and say they want to go to law school, or their son or daughter does, have them hang out with a lawyer a day or two, see what they do. But I reached a point where I thought I could do something that was a little less adversarial. You know, being a trial lawyer, it's always confrontational. Somebody's either after your client or you're after somebody else's client. And there's a lot of inherently controversial and adversarial things. I was looking for something that was a little less so. The library was appealing in part because a lot of the same issues that are interesting to lawyers. The library is fundamentally about self-governance, having everybody get access to information that theoretically helps us all be better citizens. That's sort of a lawyer's role in trying to get everybody access to the courthouse. There are a lot of issues that librarians deal with, intellectual freedom, privacy, that are also related to what lawyers care about, First Amendment issues and the like. So there was some overlap, and I had some familiarity with this library, and Bobby Roberts had done a great job in transforming it as a anchor in the community and giving it a new, really a new image in this community. And thankfully, the taxpayers had always responded to invest in building libraries around the community. So it was a very alluring library system to try to get involved with.
Yeah. So you make this change, and a similar experience, why I said late career, you know, when I decided to come back to this newspaper after 21 years away on a full-time basis 4 years ago, I was 57, and I was going around giving talks and describing it as my midlife crisis, and my wife keeps me humble. She said, if it's your midlife crisis, you're going to have to live to 114 years old. So I think it's an old life crisis. So
Fred Ursary is a friend of mine, said he was having lunch the other day with somebody, and they said, well, you know, we're all in the fourth quarter. Fred said, no, I think I'm in overtime.
So anyway, you go over there. Talk a little bit about some of what you faced, challenges you faced. There's always challenges. And then again, the fact you mentioned our mutual friend Bobby Roberts, and Bobby did kind of become legendary in this community. And as you well know, there's an old saying, I use it for college football coaches, for instance, you never want to be the guy that follows the legend. You want to be the guy that followed the guy who followed the legend.
Follow Nick Saban at Alabama than to follow Bobby Roberts at Cal's probably. He had done a lot of things that were helpful in changing the trajectory of the library. I got there as somebody who had loved libraries, loved books, loved educational things. I had teachers in my family and all varieties, and was fascinated by its mission. I didn't really have much experience with dealing with organizations. The library, for all its virtues, is still a fairly large organization, which means there's some bureaucracy. There's a chain of command. You have to work through that. And that was unusual for me. And lawyering is a very flat hierarchy. You know, you talk to the client, you talk to witnesses, you talk to the judge, but there's not a chain of reporting. And so I had to learn a lot of lessons about that sort of thing that I had no facility for or background for.
All right. Now, you are asking for a millage increase this fall. You mentioned that Bobby was pretty successful through the years. Talk a little bit about how you came to that decision, the needs that you hope to meet with this, and why you think the timing is right to go ahead and do this now.
Well, let me tell one backstory on that, too, that your guest last week interviewed Bobby, and sort of Bobby's valedictory in early March of 16. He was on his way out. I sort of job shadowed Bobby for about 6 weeks. He was kind enough to stay over after I got there, and then he left. But on the door, on the way out, he had a packed audience at the Robinson Theater, the library's theater.
Yeah.
And he got up and said, well, you know, Nate's going to have a tax millage issue within the next 3 or 4 years. You know, maybe I got late in this career. I just didn't want to do it. But Nate's going to get – so he sort of left me that kindly left that on the – but the truth was we looked at lots of ways to try to avoid that. As much as I respected Bobby, I thought that may not be inevitable. We did a lot of things to try to save money. We reduced the staff. When I got there, there were over 300 employees. We're down to, I think in your column you said 260 full-time, and they're about 280 if you had the part-time folks.
Okay.
We've reduced, you know, in other words, we're down about 8.5% to employees. We've saved hundreds of thousands of dollars on not filling some positions that came open. We eliminated a few, three part-time archivist positions, but we largely were looking for ways to save money. We brought some of the housekeeping in-house. We brought some of the lawn and garden or the groundskeeping in-house, looking for any and every way we could. That's sort of my dad, the Main Street merchant in Nashville's way. You know, every dollar you save, just like a dollar you earn, Nate, he taught me. So we went through all that. We've reached a point where they're just not, we can't save our way out of it. We've got to look for other revenues. One of the structural problems we've had is that the temporary solution in these struggles through the years had been, let's go refinance some bonds, and we're going to build some nice new things, and we'll use some of that to buy books, which is a driver of the operational budget that we're trying to satisfy. And the problem with that is you keep building things, wonderful things, the Children's Library, the Rooker Branch on Stagecoach, my favorite one architecturally, really. We built new meeting rooms. We built the theater. We built all sorts of things since there's last been a millage increase for operations. Well, as anybody knows, if you get a bigger house or you get another house or you get other things, you really are adding to your operational expenses, and we didn't do anything to address that. So we're going to try to address that, asking for a modest increase that'll raise the average property's taxes about $14 or $15 a year. What I would hope to do, because we're not still in a building mode that Bobby was so expertly leading for 15 or 20 years, and we've got libraries in most all the neighborhoods where we need them, is that we would go back sometime next year and reduce the commitment to capital millage. Taxpayer probably doesn't care whether part of our money is going to operations and part of it's going to capital, but if we can come back and reduce that, it'll probably be about a net wash. That's a complicated thing that we don't want to get too much into the weeds before we get there, but I think if we can successfully get some of the money reallocated to operations, we can fix this structural problem we've had for a number of years. And as I've noted, the cost of sort of the modern library's panoply of services is going up. I've got kids, age of your kids. I've got friends, my peers, your peers, some of whom want to read stuff digitally, listen to audiobooks, some of them who just won't do any of that. They just want a book in their hands.
Yeah.
Initially, it's not an age thing. My kids want books in their hands.
Yeah.
And a lot of older people I know want to travel lightly, so they want to be able to load it on their Kindle, and they want to listen to audiobooks. The truth is, for the library that's serving all those people, we've got to have books available on any platform, and we're going to do that. And it means more money. It costs more to provide digital content. The publisher's business model is so much more favorable to them. We don't own anything. We get to circulate it for a year or 2 years or a fixed number of checkouts, usually 26. And once that 27th checkout comes in, we've got to pay another chunk for the license to continue to have that book. But we want to do that, and we will continue to do that if we can get a little bit more money to apply to operations.
I know one thing that a modern library system like yours absolutely has to do in this day and time, and that is also private fundraising. I mean, you're out there doing that in addition to what you get from the millage, and you just had a wonderful announcement from the Wingate Foundation. Talk about that.
Yes, I think I'm glad that Joe Flaherty, your reporter on our beat, picked that up yesterday. It was a splendid story, but it illustrates, I think, this sort of public-private partnership. That Wingate generous grant of about $225,000 will let us do several things. One, we're going to hire some what we would call digital navigators. You know, a lot of people are not digitally sophisticated. I'm not. I have kids who help me learn things and get things. But a lot of people don't have access to connectivity. They don't have the devices. And you can give them a device at the library. We're now checking out mobile hotspots. But if they don't know how to use it, you really haven't done enough for them. So we're going to get two staff members with the Wingate funds to help with people just to answer questions.
Right.
Anybody and everybody can come in and we'll help you. We're also going to put some money into furthering our community outreach. I think you described this in your wonderful column a couple of Saturdays ago. We, as a part of the strategic plan in 2019, focused on, let's try to get out in the community. Let's find people who would use the library if they knew more about it, and maybe we have to take it to them. We hired a couple of liaisons, one to the African-American community, one to the Latina community, and we're going to do more of those. We send out these vehicles where they're essentially hotspots on wheels. We've got one of those. We're going to upgrade those. And then we're going to do some art in libraries. One of the things the Wingate folks like is art, and that's one of the most popular programs we have at all of our branches, art classes. Just people come in and paint. You know, President Bush became a painter, famously. Oh, absolutely. After absolutely. All of us have some struggling Picasso inside us, perhaps.
You'll be glad to know I've stayed in good enough just to stay on the Christmas card list. George W. Bush's or one of his paintings every year on the front of his Christmas card. And my wife's a native Texan, as you know, and they're usually Texas scenes, so she has them framed. So we've actually got them all over the house.
Yeah. My last trip to Crystal Bridges was to see his exhibit up there a couple of years ago.
Yeah. So,
but it illustrates, I think, we're making a commitment, the taxpayers are, in some capacities along those lines I just described, the art, the digital navigators, and the community outreach.
Bottom line point is that you're not depending anymore solely on the taxpayers, that you have to do, as a lot of institutions have to do, private fundraising also.
Yes, one of the great things about this job is that I get to work with a lot of young, usually young, and always passionate, committed people. Most all of them are smarter than I am. We hired Eliza Bourne away from Oxford American, and as you know, and she's hit the ground running.
I have mixed feelings about that because, as you know, I was a longtime board chairman of the Oxford American.
I have a lot of friends at Oxford.
That publication is very special to me,
But she's really, my board's meeting today, and I do a little report for them. I said, this is clearly, it's in the category of stating the obvious, but that grant came to us because Eliza's there, and she's doing great work.
Yeah, absolutely. I just use the word, Nate, institutions. There are certain things, and I try not to overuse it, but there are certain things that are entities, a lot of things, and then certain things that are institutions. I'm biased. I came back here because I think that this newspaper is an institution. It's important to the whole state of Arkansas that we have a strong statewide newspaper.
Absolutely.
We're looking at all the history in this room. And the library, the Central Arkansas Library System, is an institution for Central Arkansas. And for Central Arkansas to be strong, you and I are both avid readers. I think you would agree with me. We need a strong library system. We need a strong newspaper, both.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that, like, along with library interest, I was always interested in newspapers, and I subscribe now, I think, to 4 or 5 newspapers, including the one I'm here as the guest of, and appreciate it. But when I would go places, I was always interested in reading the newspaper on travel. And over the years, those newspapers started to deteriorate, I would notice. Ours didn't. And I think we're really, really fortunate in this community, in the state, to have somebody who's committed to journalism in the way the Hussman Enterprise is, and Walter's looking innovatively for ways to sustain this newsroom that we walk through and staff it properly and to cover things like the library. And I do think the library is a part of that. It's a part of the educational piece. You know, one of the things we want to do more of, and we think we do a lot, is to help parents, help teachers, the tech card, all these things that we can do that help kids, help parents help their kids, the math tutoring that we've started, another public-private partnership, the Walton donation down there, grant to set up a one-on-one tutoring with a lot of kids who are struggling in math. I had to quit helping my kids about the 4th grade with math, and a lot of parents are frustrated. So we think having tutors is a great thing. And the stronger the library is, the stronger the community is. There's a great quote, and you and I had the pleasure of having dinner with James Fallows here a couple of years ago when he spoke at the library about his book that he and his wife Deborah authored. And I was really amazed at old Hank Kelly. He's such a hard hitter and a go-getter. He got Fallows to come back and speak virtually to Rotary not long after he was over at the library. But Fallow's wife has this great line in that book, said when they would visit one of these towns that they flew all over the country for 2 or 3 years visiting to chronicle in the book, one of the first places they would go would be the Chamber of Commerce. They'd go to the newspaper, they had one, the radio station, but they would always go to the library because she said you can tell a lot about the soul of the community by visiting the public library. And I get really encouraged when people who move here oftentimes or come through here say to me, you know, I came to Little Rock from Iowa or Wisconsin, and I was really shocked that the library is so good here. And it's a compliment, but as a native, and you'll get this, there's a little bit of a sort of, speaking of George W. Bush, the soft prejudice of low ambitions, low expectations.
Low expectations,
It's like they don't expect it, but Little Rock is overachieving. Central Arkansas is overachieving, absolutely, with the newspaper, and we hope with the library.
You know, and in a few minutes we have remaining, I want to talk about Central Arkansas a little bit. Again, I think one of the things you and I agree on is that our state's largest city, Little Rock, will never achieve its potential without the Little Rock School District doing well. And I know you touched on some of them, but I know the Central Arkansas Library System, you've worked with Mike Poore, the superintendent over there. You all are pretty closely connected with Little Rock School District, aren't you, on projects?
Yes, absolutely. We think, you know, the library is all about collaboration and looking for ways to be partners. Mike Poore, when he was not even here, was calling me on the phone. Somebody in Bentonville had told him, or some friend of his who knew me told him, I think his name was one of your friends, one of our other mutual mm-hmm. Southwest Arkansas friend, Del Boyette.
Yeah, yeah.
And he called me along with scores of others, and he said, you know, Nate, I want to do something when I get down there to work with your library. We've done it in Bentonville. It's this tech card. We'll get these cards for all the kids in all the schools, and they can use your digital resources, and we did that. But that's just an example, one example of a lot of the partnerships, the nutrition program we're doing with the schools. We had the nutrition supervisor for the district working this summer to hand out meals with another partner using our children's library. Children's International is a great organization in the community. They're headquartered on the campus of UA Little Rock. They had some campers for a summer program. They wanted to do it at the children's library on 10th Street. And we said, well, let's get them a meal, a hot meal. And so we went to the Little Rock School District. But over and over and over, we think we can help the community by forging partnerships with others, getting people together. I was in a meeting yesterday. We're coming to a point where I think there's going to be some exciting news down near our children's library on the Jonesboro Drive over there. It's really the only access pedestrians and bicyclists have to get across 630 from a long stretch at about University, hazardous as that is, back down to Pine and Cedar. And the zoo's on the north side, War Memorial's on the north side. Lots of great things going to be happening there if the city sales tax passes. And the children's library's on the south side. And we want to get people coming back and forth. So we put up a little money about a year ago to hire architects to do a bunch of redesign down there. There's now some promising hope that we're going to get some money, some federal money, to redo that bridge. The highway department's got to sign off on a lot of things got to happen. But that's just one example. The library said, look, we've got a little money from a grant on safe routes to parks. Let's spend that to get some architects. Mm-hmm. We were working with the city, and this is flowering, and I think it's going to yield some really great benefits to the neighborhood down there
and to the kids
who want to come back and forth to the zoo, want to come to the library.
Right.
But that's one of the places where the library can't do anything by itself, but if we can get people together with the school district, with the zoo, with other organizations in the community, we're going to make Central Arkansas a lot better place to live for all of us.
And talking about things that are institutions, things that are anchors, things that will make Little Rock the city that it really should be, you know, with the remodeling of what was the old phones warehouse into the main library, and then really you built a whole campus, or Cal's built a whole campus down there. Talk a little bit about the importance of being downtown. I know you've got branches everywhere, but the importance of being downtown and the importance of, again, I think you and I agree on this, the importance of downtown succeeding as we go forward, that you don't have a rotten core like a lot of cities across the country have now.
Yeah, that was clearly one of the themes in Fallows' book, Our Towns, mm-hmm. is that a lot of these places have overcome economic dislocation and global economy. But they've all gone back to their downtown, whether it's Greensboro or Greenville, South Carolina, any place in the country. They all situate their revitalization along their rivers,
exactly.
along their downtowns, and I think that's one of the great things. You know, Bobby won't, he's too modest to do this, but the real beachhead was established down there with the Central Arkansas Library redoing that Phones Brothers warehouse. That was before the River Market Pavilion,
mm-hmm.
long before the Clinton Presidential Center. So when Bobby went down there and identified that building as a place,
he was a pioneer.
There were tumbleweeds. Mm-hmm. It was, you know,
a lot of broken beer bottles. Yeah,
I remember when I was a summer associate, or maybe even when I was a runner at the Wright, Lindsay and Jennings Law Firm, they rented some space for their cold storage over there in Mr. Hussman's, we called it the Terminal Building.
Yeah,
it's now at the Museum of Discovery,
right,
and a bunch of swank offices.
Building was the original name.
That's where the Wright firm stored all of its old files. And it was sort of a trip to go down there from the Worthen Building, now Bank of America. So that was remote in some ways, but Bobby saw the vision and put the library down there. and a lot of other things have ensued. So again, I think the library was an important part of the puzzle. But yes, the importance of downtown and the library's invested, the taxpayers invested a lot of resources down there with the theater, with the Roberts Library that's focused on art and history. And we had this wonderful resource that Bobby and others helped establish probably about 15 years ago now, the Encyclopedia of Arkansas. Mm-hmm. It's one of the largest online encyclopedias in the country. It's the only one, by the way, that's housed by a public library.
My most important online resource.
Yes.
Everybody's heard me say before, but I mean that sincerely, as somebody who writes about Arkansas all the time.
Yeah, there was a story at the last Summer Olympics on the front page of the sports section chronicling all the Arkansas Summer Olympic gold medal winners. And the site was to the Arkansas Encyclopedia of Arkansas. Mm-hmm. And that's a resource the library provides. And its staff is downtown. They generate about 400 articles, entries a year. We're now over 6,000 entries.
Wow.
And it's very reliable. And it's used maybe 4,000 or 5,000 times a day. Somebody, mm-hmm. students, teachers, just people doing articles and research like you do. It's just a very, very valuable resource, and it's downtown.
I was actually using it yesterday when writing about Calico Rock, of all places. So this is an example of where you're serving the entire state.
Yes.
And not just Central Arkansas, not just your footprint.
Yes, and somebody posted, I'm not on Facebook, but my wife is, and so showed me last night a photo. Somebody had been in the research room at the Butler Center, it's in the Roberts Library. And they had seen a photograph of somebody taken at what looked to be a public polio vaccination clinic back in the day, I guess. And they just stumbled on it in a scrapbook up there, so they were posting it on Facebook. That's the sort of thing that we've got to harness that resource and do a little bit better job of getting it out there, because there are all sorts of things like that. And I tell people all the time, if we can take the history that's in our archives and our special collections and make it relevant to people today, mm-hmm. I say, we want the eighth grader in middle school to know about what went on years and years ago. That makes it real for them if they can relate it to something that's going on today. So there's another example about that, I guess, when there was all the turmoil last summer after the George Floyd murder.
Right.
There was a wonderful EOA, extensive EOA, and it's been one of the most popular in the virtual period that we've had Legacies and Lunches attended sessions about the effect that the freeway coming through Little Rock had on the Ninth Street and the community that's south of that, and how it left us with this sort of divided community in terms of socioeconomics and race. But the library, again, was providing that sort of information for people to digest and to relate something in our past to where we are now.
Central Arkansas Library System is such an institution, and that makes you automatically a Central Arkansas leader. And I wanted to touch before we went, as you know, I'm also kind of a nerd about things like census figures, and I've just been spending hours with the census figures as we saw 53 of the 75 Arkansas counties lose population in the last 10 years. Basically, you have three growth areas left in Arkansas. It's Northwest Arkansas, what I now call the Jonesboro-Paragould Corridor, because those have kind of grown together. They've eaten up Goobertown in between and kind of grown into one metro area. And then the Little Rock metro area, Pulaski County and surrounding counties here, those were your real growth areas. And I think those are probably your only three really strong growth areas. So it's important that all three do well. And Nate, sometimes I think we do ourselves a disservice in saying, boy, we're not anywhere near Northwest Arkansas levels, because very few places in the country are near Northwest Arkansas levels. But if you look instead, an example that I tend to use to make people in Little Rock feel better, let's go back to 1980, and to you and I anymore, that doesn't seem that long ago. And you look, in 1980, Jackson, Mississippi had 200,000 residents. Little Rock had 160,000. It's exactly the opposite now. And so we've seen Little Rock over those 40 years gain 40,000. We've seen Jackson lose 40,000. Birmingham continues to lose population. Huntsville just became the biggest city in the state of Alabama, believe it or not. So you compare to comparable cities like Jackson, Birmingham. Little Rock's doing okay. We passed 200,000. But again, I think it's incumbent that we have strong institutions like CALS to really pick that up and keep that going into the future. And it's important, I think, to the whole state that the state capitol do well, because as I told my friends in Northwest Arkansas, and you and I have got a bunch up there, but they can't carry this whole state by themselves.
Well, and it's different. You know, there are a lot of wonderful things up there. My parents both were fortunate enough to get educations in Fayetteville. One of my children has. I was fortunate enough to be on the law school faculty up there for 2 years. But Little Rock is different. We've got the river. We've got the state government. We've got the center of health care here at UAMS. And it's not, and it's not a zero-sum matter. You know, I had a good friend up there several years ago who was telling me about Crystal Bridges and how wonderful it was, which it absolutely is. And he said, you know, this is bigger than the Clinton Presidential Center. And I said to my friend, that's like comparing your two children. You know, you don't, one's not at the expense of the other. And we don't need to think of it like that. And I think Little Rock has to focus on its strengths, its uniqueness, its assets, and the things that it does that are going to make it thrive. And I do. I wish had our population grew at 4.5 or 6%, you wish it had been twice that.
Right.
But the reality is, if you grade yourself on the curve by looking at other places that have comparable economic resources, comparable populations, then we're doing pretty well. I think the question should always be, can't
we
do
better? So much better than Jackson, so much better than Shreveport.
Right.
There's another one I might mention.
Yes, and you know,
it's really losing population.
We don't need to, you know, spend a lot of time patting ourselves on the back. We still got challenges, and we can deal with those. And the library, I hope, is in the center of facing some of those. But I'm optimistic about the future of Little Rock. And I know your guest last week, our friend Skip, when he spoke to Rotary, said that, you know, in some ways, Little Rock has to stand up and sort of separate itself from some of the negativity that may be associated with the whole state.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he didn't spin that out. But I do think we have a lot of things that people can feel good about if they're looking to come to Arkansas. They can think about Little Rock, as well as the other two population growth areas that you've identified. I wish all the counties were going. I was sad to see that my home county, Howard County, lost population. And I just, you know, it's not a unique thing to Arkansas. The majority of rural counties in the country are losing population. You know, there were some signs of this when I started hearing from my lawyer friends 10 years or so ago that it was harder and harder to get lawyers out of law school, and I assume this is true for doctors, I know it is, to go to places that are small town. The things that you and I thought were benefits to growing up in a small town don't seem to be as attractive to those folks. There are one or two counties now in Arkansas that don't have any lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
And I assume that kids out of law school would rather be in Jonesboro or Fayetteville or Bentonville or Rogers or Little Rock or Conway or someplace where they sense there's more to do and they sense that they may not be excited to live in small towns. So I don't know what you do about that, but the reality is we still have to take advantage of the places that are growing and try to strengthen them in ways we can. I hope the library can participate in helping that happen here.
That's a good note to end on, I think. Nate, thanks.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Really
enjoyed
appreciate it. Nate Coulter from the Central Arkansas Library System. Thanks for listening.
Let me remind people the election of the library is November 9th. There are two other elections between now and then. We're patiently waiting our turn, but we hope people will remember the date of November the 9th. And if you are persuaded that it's a good investment in your community and the library that serves it, we hope people will vote yes.
Thanks, Nate. Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Southern Fried Podcast. I'm Rex Nelson, senior editor of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, and we'll see you next time.